Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Surrounded by star-spangled banners, colorful lights, angels, poinsettias, carols and holly. This is Karuna along with audio engineer Sunil signing in live with Morning Glory from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Today is December the 19th, 2013. The outside temperature in Prashanti Nilayam right now is 24 degrees Celsius. We are currently experiencing overnight lows of 16 and daytime highs of 29 Celsius. The time in the ashram right now is 9:41 a.m. Let's start off Morning Glory by seeking the blessings of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. Dear listeners, in exactly 6 days from now, the global Sai family here at Prashanti Nilayam will celebrate the holiest day in the Christian calendar, and we will do so in the true Sai style. That means men and women and children from diverse countries and regions of varied ethnicities and religions will hail the birth of the Son of God, Jesus the Christ. The uniqueness of Christmas in Prashanti Nilayam is that Hindus and Muslims, Sikhs and Parsis, Jews, Christians all celebrate this festival with the same love and unity as they celebrate Mahashivaratri, Buddha Purnima or Eid at Satya Sai Baba's abode. Many paths, one goal. Many names, one God. That truly is the ecumenical spirit of Sai teachings. The signs of this unity in diversity are to be found all over our ashram. Everywhere around one can spot smiling faces of varied hues going about in teams carrying loads of beautiful Christmas decorations. My personal favorite, of course, is always the meditation park near our office. There along the trail you can see the golden statue of Lord Jesus standing on the highest point, decorated ever so beautifully. The serenity of the surroundings makes it a really spellbinding sight. And the ashram atmosphere, of course, is charged with joy associated with the holy day. Here at Prashanti Nilayam, we celebrate the spiritual version of Christmas with prayers and singing of carols and remembering the gospel of Christ. So while elsewhere, this season is often associated with retail sales, gift exchanging, Christmas parties and so on, here in Prashanti, we are hosting the international community that has come to reclaim the true spirit of Christmas. And each year, one country is in charge of Christmas decorations in the ashram. Last year, that is 2012, belonged to the Kiwis, as New Zealand took the lead and their theme was Aroha. This year, the Aussies are here. In a moment, we'll talk to four members of the Australian team in charge of the ashram decorations for Christmas 2013. Our guests have actually arrived at the studio to share their stories. Also, coming up on Morning Glory today, we'll debut some divine music from two of our latest Sai Blossom products, namely Mata Mata and Nada Brahman 7. And I'll have one of my colleagues, Brother Prem, give us a bit of a behind-the-scenes stories about Mata Mata and Nada Brahman 7. And finally, on Morning Glory, we'll conclude our ongoing series of Fleeting Moments conversation with Brother Gautam Dutt.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai Ram, and thank you for staying tuned. In Prashanti, we're just used to waking up each morning to a new decoration, a new theme, a new festival, and a new concert. For life is an eternal celebration in this most happening place on the planet. And this year, the devotees are abuzz with joy because the country in charge of the decoration is the land down under. Today on Morning Glory, we have four members from the Australian team with us. They are Judy Rowling from Griffith, New South Wales, Kingsley Satinandan, a risk management consultant from Sydney, New South Wales, and I beg your pardon, I forgot to introduce Judy's profession. She's a physical therapist. Also with us is Veena Sri Anandaraja, a lawyer from Sydney, and Ruvin Mahadeva, a dentist from Perth. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Sai.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, what can we expect this year from the Australians as far as the Christmas decorations are concerned? Veena, you want to have a go at it?
Thank you, Auntie Karuna. Australia is very blessed with the opportunity to decorate Prashanthi Nilayam and offer carols this year. By Swami's grace, we hope to offer him an Australian surprise on Christmas morning. I'm sure he's already well ahead of us, but we'd still like to try. So we're hoping to offer him a Christmas extravaganza full of Australian natural beauty. And our theme is joy to the world. So we want to bring to Swami our beautiful outback bushlands and the coastlines of our beautiful country. In addition to the decorations and carols, we are also conducting a national pilgrimage, and we've invited all Australian devotees of all ages right across the country to come and be a part of the Christmas festivity and offering to Swami. At this stage, we're anticipating between 350 to 400 pilgrims from down under.
That sounds like a very impressive figure. Now, to get where you are, to get this kind of a theme rolling and such a large number of people coming, let me ask Brother Kingsley Satinandan, what kind of logistics are involved in putting such a show together?
Saira, we actually set up the strategy up front, whereby the team collectively made a decision that we will get all the devotees around Australia involved in presenting designs in the first place. And on the second part, we also got them involved in the production. And that has helped us today to bring 400 devotees to Prashanthi. It was a big task. Just to summarize what was done in each state, mm-hmm. Western Australia did 1,008 flowers, handmade, which is going to be depicted in the Sai Kulwant Hall and the Yajur Mandir. Victoria handmade 17,000 leaves for the Sai Kulwant Hall trees, the pillars.
Wow, that's a very impressive number, 17,000.
Leaves were cut out and joined together, and you will see that in Sai Kulwant Hall.
Can't wait to see it. This sounds so exciting.
And Queensland actually is depicting the sea around Australia on the fence, through blue tinsel, and two whales and six dolphins jumping out of the sea.
Okay.
New South Wales did a lot of painting, a lot of stitching, which you'll see around. South Australia has done the backdrop, which will go on the men's and ladies' storage areas. And Tasmania has contributed through funding and various things towards the project.
Sounds very exciting. Feels like we are going to all experience a little bit of Australia sitting right here. It'll feel like we are celebrating Christmas in Australia while we are in Prashanthi. That's quite exciting.
Definitely.
Now, Ruvin Mahadeva, from a dentist from Perth, he's here to tell us a little bit about the ground reality. What's happening here right now?
Thanks, Auntie. You know, sometimes, no matter how much thought you put into a plan, mm-hmm. And no matter how much detail you put into the plan, there are always ground challenges.
Oh, of course.
And for us, it was very important to understand that we are in a definitely a very different environment to what we were used to in Australia. And some of the obstacles we faced included, first and foremost, language barriers. And we were very fortunate to have a Rosetta Stone in one of our team members, Auntie Saraswati, who
is multilingual.
It's very multilingual, yes. And then the other big thing is knowing the best person to speak to in Prashanthi and knowing how to speak to them. I think that's very important to get things done, isn't it?
It's a whole new skill set, right?
Yes, extremely important. The other big thing I was very awed by is the communications. It's such a big ashram, and very often we have to get things on the spot and go outside the ashram, run around. And I sometimes am in awe as to how groups in the past managed to do this without mobile phones, because we have been relying heavily on them. So that is one thing that I really did reflect on.
Because the world did exist before the mobile phones came in.
Exactly, yes. And the other thing, of course, are the pilgrims. The key to a project like this, more than the decorations, is to really unite this large group of 400 pilgrims and finding a way to ensure that they feel included in the whole process. Because, you know, really, with decorations, if you sometimes think of a beautiful picture, technically brilliant painting, and then you compare it to a very simple picture, sometimes you may feel a lot more connection and love to that simple painting, even though it's not as technically brilliant as that beautiful picture. Mm-hmm. And I feel the reason for that is because of the love and the thought and the unity that is put into or poured into that simple painting, as opposed to that technically brilliant picture. And I think this is where this 400 odd group of people have to feel inspired and pour that love into whatever decorations that we do. And that is what will bring the brilliance in the decorations that we hang up in Prashanthi Nilayam. But I guess in the end of the day, these sort of challenges are very common we've experienced in the past. Swami always puts these tests to us and challenges us to surrender everything to him. And I think we are doing quite well so far.
Knock on wood. I hope it goes
touch
the same
wood,
way.
Yes. Yes.
Sounds wonderful, and I think the organic vision and group dynamics, there's so much to learn from them. Now, talking about the design details, Judy Rowling, what can you share with Radio Sai listeners about the details of the design this year?
Sai Ram, everybody, thank you for giving us this opportunity to be able to express some of the joy behind what we've been able to do up to this point. When I was asked to do the design, or to be the design coordinator, originally at the Sai conference in Canberra in Australia, Swami gave me the rainbow serpent, and I really felt quite ignorant. So I went home and I researched, and it became the creator. It is the creator of the Aboriginal mythology. It creates the earth, it creates the animals, and it created the people.
The rainbow serpent?
The rainbow serpent.
How did you get the symbol? In your meditation? In your...
No, I as I was listening to Reuven and Veena talking about people wanting to make any kind of contribution in a design concept, Swami gives me those little click moments where, you know, I write a concept and then I expand on it, I go back, I research on it.
Just a flash of intuition.
A flash of intuition, if you like, yes. And it's very difficult to describe, because the whole time, the conference was based on Be His Instrument. Mm-hmm. And I did the exhibition for the conference. And the whole time doing that, I was definitively his instrument, the flute. And when it came to doing the design, it was completely left field. Swami really wants us to step outside the square. And I didn't really get a concept of that until probably 5 days ago. I was sitting contemplating and asking Swami, well, what's the next step? And it came to me that this is completely different, and we need to grow out of what we're so used to. And also, as I was doing the design elements and getting the designers to send in concepts for me to incorporate in the overall design, what came through was the reflection. Swami gave me to put the stars, the Milky Way, which we are all under. Every single person on this earth sees the Milky Way. So that became a part of the dynamic within the design. Also too, with the theme of joy to the world, it became really important to bring that joy from that initial inspiration of the rainbow serpent into the whole concept of the Christmas decorations. So stepping outside the square, we've actually made the concepts quite eye-catching.
Mm-hmm.
When you see the trees, they've been hand-painted. It's the rainbow eucalyptus. When you see the animals hanging off the trees, no one else has had animals hanging off the trees. When I was in a conversation with Swami in my mind, and I said, Swami, they won't like this, it's not Christmas. And he would give that concept to me, just stick with it, just stay with it, just keep with it, just mm-hmm. let it flow. And it did. And I then wrote a story about each of the different concepts of the Christmas story. And if I could just impart some of Swami's quotes.
Please do.
The three different quotes. The Aboriginals have what they call a dream time. In the dream time, that's, you know, before people were made, when the universe was being created. So Genesis 1 to 5 says, in the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, the earth was a formless void. A darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. So I've given the three concepts. The Aboriginal concept, next, is from Animal Dreaming by Scott Alexander King, who was an Australian, and he's done a lot of research in Australia on a lot of the Aboriginal mythology with the different animals. Say, for instance, the dolphin means breath. It's the birthing, the first part of our breath. So when we were talking earlier about the Saikulwantol having the oceans with the dolphins and the whale is the record keeper, and the dolphins, you know, jumping with joy. Everything is joyful. And so I've been telling a lot of our people, and I'd like the listeners to also be aware that every animal has a spirit and every animal has a meaning. And a lot of the tribes become quite close to a lot of their animals when they have an animal. The American Indians use that as their totem or things like that. So the Aboriginal side of the dream time, which is in the beginning when God created the heavens and the earth, the dream time was the time before time, when the world was new and the ancestor spirits were wandering the earth, often in human shape, helping to bring form to the land, the plants and the animals. It was when everything on the horizon was being created and when everything was getting used to being. As the ancestor spirits wandered the earth, they set about forming links between groups and individuals. When the ancestors had finished, some returned to the stars or the land, while others became animals and other things. This was a sacred time, alive with the magic of creation, a time now gone, but still imbued with great power for the people who continue to believe that the spirits are still here, disguised in the forms they took when the earth was new. Swami's quote that I've included, which is absolutely beautiful. There was no one to know who I am until I created the world at my pleasure with one word. Immediately, mountains rose up, oceans, seas, lands and watersheds, sun, moon and the desert sands sprang out of nowhere to prove my existence. Came all forms of beings, men, beasts and birds, flying, speaking, hearing. All powers were bestowed upon them under my orders. The first place was granted to mankind, and my knowledge was placed in man's mind. And I've also included, and so our journey begins here from a far-off ancient landmass we call Australia. And it's a coming together again, because the land masses originally were together. So we've brought the land and the animals that were split originally from India, And so we're brothers again.
My God, this is so deep and awe-inspiring. Wow. I feel like clapping to that. And there's such a huge component of Aboriginal content, and the way you have connected it with Bhagwan's teachings and where we are, it's way more than just interesting decoration to look at with aesthetic appeal. It's way beyond that. Mm. I hope you will have an opportunity to share all this wisdom with the huge congregation that is there during the celebration, for them to know that everything around them symbolizes something which is the wisdom of the ancient Aboriginal people of Australia, which is not in any way different or distinct from what the Vedas tell us, for that matter. Mm-hmm. All traditions teach us the same thing. Everything in creation is sacred and interconnected.
Mm, exactly. If you do look at the Aboriginals, they do have very similar features to a lot of the Indians. So we're not so distant. And under the stars, under that Milky Way that we all see, we've all come together again.
Absolutely. Oh, that's very beautiful.
Thank you.
Very nicely expressed too. Thank you, Judy. Now, this whole exercise of bringing 400 people here, planning for a year, seeking Swami's guidance, insights, reflection, contemplation, to come up with something so profound, and then translating this vision in your head into artifacts, and then getting everybody on the group involved in doing their little part. So it's like a collective sadhana, an individual sadhana. There must have been a lot of learning that went with it.
Yes, I think each individual has learned something quite unique about themselves through the journey. Individually as the design coordinator, I have learned so much on a grand scale. I could say honestly the exhibition was probably the most fraught experience, but I haven't been fazed by doing the decoration coordinating here in Prashanti, and I think that's Swami's influence.
Mm-hmm.
I think once his hand is on whatever you do, once he has blessed it, I feel completely confident.
But Judy, you're a physical therapist by profession. How did you land up in the design business?
I've always been artistic, always been creative. I've sewn, I've done a lot of things in my life.
Uh-huh.
Being a country girl, I probably can say people will laugh. I drive a truck, a semi-trailer. So, you know, you have life, and it becomes interesting, and it becomes a fusion of all different tasks and talents.
True. And for the rest of you, what were some of the learnings that came your way in the process? We'll begin with Kingsley.
In organizing the logistics part, one of the biggest learnings that I've had is that it is not me who was organizing. It is Swami who organized everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just to quote you a couple of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway through the logistics thing, we were offered to do the curtain for the Samadhi.
Mm-hmm.
And so I flew into Hyderabad, organized the curtain and everything. But back of my mind, I was thinking about, okay, how am I going to fund this? All right. And I landed back in Sydney 2 days later, and driving from the airport, somebody rings me up and says, brother, Swami has asked me to do something, and this is what it is. And he has already taken care of that.
Hmm.
Right? And various other material and everything before I could think, and I'm breaking my head, but next day I get a call, brother, can we do this? So it is not us, but it was Swami. It was 100 miles ahead of us, planning and doing things. Hmm. That's how it all happened.
That's so beautiful to know. I guess as long as you surrender and you do it from a place of love,
right,
he's in charge.
Definitely.
Very nice. How about you, Ruben?
When we first started planning this, the ego was obviously there from the start, thinking that we can execute this with no problems. But as the year progressed, speaking to Brother Kingsley, hearing his various experiences, it became quite evident that we were simply just witnesses to this whole process. And even when we came to Puttaparthi, we were continuously challenged to just let it go, let it flow. It's His will, and all we have to do is simply align to it. There are so many examples of this. I don't want to go into detail, but that is probably the biggest learning experience for me. And
share any if you feel up to it.
Well, one quote that I was speaking to one of the the permanent residents here in Prashanthi yesterday, and one thing that she said that really struck me was, your job is to care for everyone. Swami's job is to carry everyone.
Beautiful.
And that essentially sums the whole thing up, I feel. Yeah. Thanks.
That was good wisdom, the person shared with you. So your job is to care for everyone, and Swami's job is to carry everyone together. Nice. Veena?
Sairam, I agree with with everything that people have said before me.
Right.
I'm a bit tongue-tied because I'm so in awe of everything, all the wisdom flowing out of my teammates.
Are you surprised?
No. Definitely not surprised. It's a very touching moment because this is probably the first time we've had a moment to sit down and actually take stock and share our thoughts and experiences of how things are going. So it's somewhat...
Because you've just been running breathlessly so far.
Exactly. And it's somewhat overwhelming. And I hardly ever get tongue-tied, but here we go, Swami.
I mean, considering you're a lawyer, getting tongue-tied is not part of the territory.
Definitely not. But in terms of what I'd like to add is, I definitely agree that we've learned a lot about letting go and letting God. We have to trust in Swami's plan, in His wisdom, in His timing, in His instruments. And as Reuven said, we are only here to care. He carries. And that, to me, means that we are His instruments. And that's the most important learning. Anybody who's looking to do decorations work or bring a team or a pilgrimage here can learn. Be the instrument. Let go of the vision you may have of how things are going to be or how they're going to turn out. If I can share one little story.
Please do.
Years ago, I think it was in 2006, I was sitting in Saikolwanthor as part of another pilgrimage. And in a brief moment of inspiration, because I've always loved Kulwanthor, I think it is the most beautiful, happiest place in the world to be. And in a brief moment of inspiration, I looked at Swami and I said, give me one night to clean and decorate this place. Just one night, if I can hang up one bauble, one tinsel. And it was the Chinese New Year time. So that was my only sincere thought. And immediately I just went, you know, I thought to myself, this is never going to happen, forget it. And the thought went away. In December 2012, I got the call asking to coordinate this process. And I realized then that little thought, which only Swami had planted, had started taking root and was blossoming. And I think the biggest blessing has been working with my teammates. I've learned so much from them. And I can only be grateful to Swami for the teachings of letting go and letting God.
Beautiful. Very well said. Would anybody care to add anything else?
Yes, thank you, Karana. I'd just like to let the listeners know that please do come, if anybody's out there that are not sure of what's happening, to come to Prashanthi and share those blessings. It's not just for Christians. I am a Christian, but I do love Swami. And just share more than just what Swami is. He is greater than just those Christmas decorations. Jesus is much greater than those Christmas decorations. But coming under that one roof in that mandir, sharing experiences and just the love that flows between us all. So thank you.
Thank you so very much. Thank you, Judy, Kingsley, Veena and Reuven, for sharing all this wonderful inspiration and information with our listeners. And we're all looking forward to going to the Saikolwanthor and beholding everything that you've just spoken to us about. Appreciate your presence on the show very, very much.
Thank you.
Sairam.
Now moving along, dear listeners, I have some divine music to play for you. And given the paucity of time for the show, I'll only play a few songs from each of these two wonderful brand new Sai Blossom albums we have just released. Here then is a song from Nadi Brahman 7 and another one from Dana Gillespie's Mata Mata. Have a listen, please.
Daya karo he daya nidhe he bhagavan.
चरण तुम्हारे
तन मन धन सब चरण
तुम्हारे
Dear listeners, and thank you for staying with us on Morning Glory on December the 19th, 2013. We are coming to you live from the Radio Sai studios here in Prashanthi Nilayam, India. With me right now is my colleague, Brother Prem. Prem, what can you tell our listeners about this divine music that I just played from Nada Brahman series, Volume 7 and Mata Mata?
Yeah, first of all, thank you, Didi. Thank you for calling me. And those are definitely beautiful tracks that you played. These are products which come out as part of the Sai Blossom series. And essentially they are from the Shri Satya Sai Media Division, which is part of the Sadhana Trust.
So what is our relationship with them? You know, what you and I and everybody on the Radio Sai team does, how are we related to Sai Blossom?
Yeah, it's quite complex to say the least. We have something called the Prashanthi Digital Studio, which is nothing but where we are sitting right now, which houses the Radio Sai and all of us and all the activities mm-hmm. which we do. There were a couple of things which happened, though we know that all our listeners are aware that all the services which we provide are for free. The 6 streams that we run, the website that we run, the mailing service, we have about 60,000-70,000 people receiving Sai Inspires every day. And we try to bring live whatever happens in the Kulwant Hall.
All of it is free, of course.
All this is offered free. And we want to keep it this way as much as possible. And Sai Blossom is one venture which will help us do this. Because we were thinking that if we could do a little bit of commercial activity, not compromising on what Swami would expect of us, of taking his message and taking or what he would like people to listen to, and if that could support this activity of taking Swami's message free, of course, to every home. So that is how Sai Blossom came to be. And we also wanted to ensure that we get good quality products.
Yes, I noticed quality is a hallmark of everything under that Sai Blossom label.
Yes, that's what we tried, because what we found was, as most of the readers and listeners of our website and Radio Sai will be aware, that almost everything that's played on the radio is there for download. We give everything, every discourse which is played is there for download, every bhajan is there for download. But every now and then people would always come and ask that if you could put it on a CD and sell it, we will still buy.
But I do understand that when they get the CD under the Sai Blossom label, the quality, audio quality is even higher.
Right, exactly. So that's when we started doing products. And then we made sure that, you know, our products which go out should be comparable to any of these audio products which are being sold outside. So that has been an endeavor. I don't know if we've reached there. Our humble prayer to Swami is that we get there. But we're always trying to do that. to make sure that our products, Sai Blossom products, anything that comes under that label has the ability to match up to any other product which comes out. And that's why we are selling it on Amazon and all the other regular e-portals which market these kind of products, so that these are good quality products which bring out Swami's bhajan, Swami's message, Swami's life into the domain which is where quality is premium.
And I understand we can get them at Amazon.com, Amazon UK, as well as our own website, saiblossom.org.
Right. You could order it there, or you could always pick it up from the Sai Blossom store, which is just opposite Radio Sai, if you're visiting Prashanthinilam. And that's always special. You come to Prashanthinilam and pick up a product from here.
And it's such an ideal Christmas gift, birthday gift, instead of just buying another thing that people will say, oh, nice gift, and just leave, keep it in their closet for re-gifting. Here is something they can really use for a beautiful, uplifting encounter, divine encounter.
And absolutely, that's the idea, especially the product which you played, Nada Brahmam. You know, that was how it came to be. Initially, Sundaram Bhajans were ruling the roost. You know?
Yes.
Even Venkatraman sir says how Radio Sai was surviving on Sundaram Bhajans, and then Prashanti Mandir Bhajans took over because of the life speed and the spontaneity which it was coming up with. Then we came up with this idea of Nada Brahmam. If we could maintain that life feel, if we could maintain that bhajan atmosphere and bring in some studio recording with clarity. So that's why it's not as comparable to something like Bhavanjali, where it is crystal clear recording. This is a live, you know, the boys have a bhajan session here in studio and it's just recorded. So the idea was you could just play this bhajan and have a session of bhajan in your center or at your home. And I remember, I mean, that's how we started bhajans in our home. We would just play a cassette and sit and sing along. So that was the idea. So we brought this Nada Brahmam as a product which could be played in a center and a bhajan session could be added. And then added to that, somebody said if you could add visuals of Swami, it would complete the experience. And that's why sing along came by. And so every product which is coming out is almost like what people would want to use in a center or at their homes.
And it's a nice way to replicate that Prashanti experience no matter where you are, no matter how small your congregation is. If you're starting a center in your home with just your family member, you can still feel the vibration of Prashanti thanks to these products.
And absolutely. I think that's our mission statement, whether it's a Radio Sai or a Sai Blossom, like someone was saying the other day. You know, the mission statement of Disney is to make children happy. So like that, I think the mission statement for all of us is to bring Prashanti to your home. And that could happen through these products, through our Radio Sai, through the website, or through whatever we do here, and that's our prayer to Swami.
So if someone goes to saiblossom.org, can they order online?
Yes, that facility is available now for people living in the US. Amazon US is there for people in UK and Europe, thanks to the initiative of some of the devotees there. We have Amazon on UK now. Apart from that, you could also order some of these products through the Books and Publications Trust,
the Sadhana Division,
the Publications Division, sorry.
They also carry Sai Blossom products.
They also carry Sai Blossom products. You could order it to them. They have a wonderful delivery system. People could make use of that. Or they could even order online through the saiblossom.org portal, by which we would ship the products to them.
Well, that's wonderful information. I think we're going to have you again on the show, because as we debut various Sai Blossom products on Morning Glory, it would be very nice to get all this behind-the-scenes peek at what goes into putting them together and what the thought is. Thank you, Prem, for being on Morning Glory.
Thank you, Didi, and thanks, Swami, for this opportunity.
And, dear listeners, so what are you waiting for? Here is a chance to order. Now, before I let go of you, I'm going to play one more song from Mata Mata for your listening pleasure. Please enjoy.
Yuga yuga khe अवतार तुम्ही हो युग युग के अवतार तुम्ही मेरे राम मेरे श्याम श्री साई पाठी राम मेरे राम मेरे श्याम श्री साई पाठी राम जगत के पालन हार तुम्ही हो Allah Ishwara Tere Naam Allah Ishwara Tere Naam Sab ko sammati do Bhagwan Sab ko sammati do Bhagwan Allah Ishwara Tere Naam Shri Sai के पालन हार तुम्ही हो जग के पालन हार तुम्ही हो युग युग के अवतार तुम्ही हो युग युग के अवतार तुम्ही हो मेरे राम मेरे श्याम श्री साई पाठी राम मेरे श्याम श्री साई पाठी राम जगत के पालन हार तुम्ही हो जग के पालन हार तुम्ही हो युग युग के अवतार
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Dear brothers and sisters, I hope you enjoyed those few songs I played for you from our recent offerings, Sai Blossom offerings, Nada Brahman 7 and Mata Mata by Dana Gillespie. Now is the exact perfect time to order these, and you can do so, as Prem told us, by visiting saiblossom.org, Amazon UK, Amazon.com, or from the Sri Satya Sai Books and Publication Trust's website, and look for these offerings under the title of Sai Blossom. Moving along, today we are pleased to bring you the seventh and concluding part of our Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview with Sai University alumnus Mr. Gautam Dutt. He is in conversation with Radio Sai's very own Mr. Bishu Prushti.
Sai Ram and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with former students of Baba's schools and colleges. Today we bring you the seventh and the concluding part of the conversation with Mr. Gautam Dutt. Gautam joined the Prashanthi Nilayam campus of Bhagwan's University in 1984 for his bachelor's in arts and went on to do his master's MA in English, which he completed in 1989. Immediately after this, Bhagwan graced him with the opportunity of teaching in his college in the Brindavan campus, which he did for 14 years till 2003. Later, he moved to the Middle East, to the Gulf country of Sultanate of Oman. And as of August 2013, when this conversation was recorded, he continued to work in Oman in the Caledonian College of Engineering as the head of department in the Department of English. In conversation with him is Radio Sai's Bishu Prushti.
I think coming generations, as you very rightly put, once they try to connect to him, they will get those experiences. They'll all be guided.
Yeah, because, you know, I remember you saying that, how does it feel to go out into the world after you have lived here. I'll tell you how it feels. It feels like a king.
Feels like a king?
I'm a king, yes. Because I can walk down the road in the world and know the difference between what matters and what doesn't matter.
Very clear in your mind.
Very clear. And if everything is taken away and I'm left to, you know, sit under a tree without anything or in a cave, I would still be blissful. I would still be happy because, as, you know, Meera sang in her bhajan, Rama Naam Dhanapayo. You have the name. You have the form. This is your greatest treasure. What do you need other than that? Nothing. You have to do your duty in the world. And Baba said, you know, head in the forest, hands in society. And he made us strong enough, you know, to live in that society, to serve it. But we know the difference. We know what is the difference between fleeting pleasures and indefinite joy. You know, we know the source, where it comes from. And we are not like a leaf in the wind anymore.
Yes.
That's the important thing.
Exactly.
So, when I see people around me, I understand how they are living. They are living in the ego, you know. But it's not their fault. But I also understand what's happening to them. And, you know, people say, you know, but you don't get agitated. You're always so calm. You're always so cool. Why is that, you know? And I just smile because how can I explain it to them? That, you know, I had this wonderful interaction with the divine and,
yes,
and this is what he did. And this is what he made me. It's not like I have to exert myself or I have to behave in a particular way or I have to make an effort to do that. It's not. He's polished me.
Yes.
Right, you know, in a very strong way. And he's developed my willpower and he's done everything that I needed.
So that you can become a king. You can live like a king.
To be like a
life
king.
Life is a celebration,
exactly.
Then.
Exactly. So for some people, small things become very important. But when you are out there, you know, you accept.
Yes.
One of the things Baba taught me in a very, very forceful and very strong way was, have no expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing given in the Gita.
Yes, karma yoga.
Do the karma. Don't worry about the fruit, you know.
So that kind of takes away all the burden.
Absolutely. And what Shri Baba used to say, Shraddha and Saburi. Have the faith, have the patience. Patience is a virtue, I tell you, which will take anybody across the ocean of life.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be developed. And this is where you develop it, at the lotus feet. This is where you developed it. It didn't just come.
If you can explain how you have felt the power of patience in your life.
Well, for us, it's very simple because we leave it to the divine. So it's all divine will, you know. You don't carry the burden. You know, Baba used to say in a very nice way, you know, you people are like travelers in a train. You're traveling in a train and then you're carrying the baggage on your head. So take the baggage off your head and put it down. What he meant was, give your burdens to me. So what people do is, for example, they might pray, you know, Swami or God, I have this problem and please solve it. And then they keep on worrying about it.
Yeah.
Once you have prayed that you have a problem and you've handed it over to the divine, then don't worry about it. Forget it and see what happens.
If you're worrying, then you have not really given it to him.
Then you're not giving it to him. You're hanging on to it. You're still carrying that burden in the train.
Exactly.
You know, so once you've given it to the divine, let it go. Now it's his problem, not yours. Now that kind of faith has to be developed. It needs experience. It needs, you know, a little bit of penance, I guess. Sadhana.
Yes.
Yeah. And then sadhana is what? Nothing but practice, you know.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
As you practice more and more, you develop faith in it. And, you know, like something that works.
Mm.
It's like driving.
Yes.
The first time you drive and then the second time you drive.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah.
So ultimately until you learn that driving and then you know you are able to drive. So you trust yourself.
Mm. What are the other things that you really find so useful to you now as you work in the Middle East, so many miles away from Prashanthi Nilayam and do your professional work? What are the different other trainings, you know, that you have received here at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet, which you feel you always thank God I have this in my personality, you know? This doesn't affect me anymore, or am I able to sail through and discharge all the responsibilities in a smooth manner?
Yeah, that's because of the environment which Baba created. Simple living, high thinking.
Hmm.
You know, that was his philosophy. Simple living, and high thinking. What I learned is, we as human beings usually tend to complicate things. You have to move the other way. You have to tend to uncomplicate things and make them as simple as you can. This is what he taught us here. And the environment that he created was so, as you said, integrated. This is the word I would use, because Baba used to use that, you know, an integrated environment. That there is nothing that I have not experienced here that anybody can show me in the world outside and say, hey, this is something which you never experienced in Puttaparthi.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, if you have already experienced whatever there is to experience, then how can anybody show you otherwise? So, obviously you become a king, isn't it? It's only when there is something which you don't have or you have not experienced, and then, you know, somebody can tempt you with that. But there isn't anything. In fact, I have something which they don't.
Which they have not experienced.
Yes. So that is the difference. Now, what I've noticed outside, and even if people, you know, some people may not like my personality, my persona, because everybody has a perception.
Yes.
Everybody has a principle and a philosophy of life. And you don't necessarily fit into everybody's, you know, philosophy and principles. So people may not like you, but one thing I've noticed is, even if they don't like me, they do respect me.
Because they see something that they cannot dismiss
it. Yes, they can't put their finger on it. What is it? You know? But they know it is there. And they have to accept it.
Yes.
Now, that is what we need to be grateful about with Baba. Because he's the one who created that personality.
Yes. As they say, you know, once you come into his presence, you're no more ordinary. In some ways, you do become extraordinary.
Absolutely. Because, as he said to us when we were students, he doesn't want us to be like street dogs. He wants us to be street lamps.
Yes.
To light the way, you know. And what do you want to light the way to? To the divine.
Yes.
So they find it very strange. For example, I'm in a Muslim country. And if there is a student who is, you know, following his religion sincerely, and I tell him, you know, you're a good boy, he's surprised because, you know, I'm a Hindu. He's a Muslim. How come I'm telling him that you're doing a good job?
Oh, my God.
You know, it's a question of perception. He differentiates. I don't differentiate. So that's a simple equation. People are building barriers. People are building walls. I'm not. I'm trying to break down those walls.
Yes.
So that's...
You never had those walls in your mind.
Yes, of course. And that is all due to the grace of Bhagwan Satya Sai Baba. So... Mm. That's the difference. And it's a very simple difference, but, you know, simple things take time. For example, if somebody has to speak the truth or learn to speak the truth, it would take him ages, maybe a whole lifetime, until he realizes that to speak the truth is the best way out. You know? So these simple things take long time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, were there any more occasions as you stay there now in Middle East where, you know, you find people, you know, who are sort of influenced with your way of thinking, your way of life, and, you know, they have perhaps taken some aspects from your personality and tried to see if they can take them into
I think
their
lives. The best compliment I've received from my friends who are not Hindus is that you are a good Muslim.
That's nice.
You are a better Muslim than some people I know, is it? I think that's a great compliment.
Exactly.
You know?
Especially working in Oman.
Yes, because what it tells me, and I keep telling this to my Muslim friends also, the eternal values are the same. It doesn't matter which stream of religion you are following. The values of all religions say the same thing. They say, speak the truth, be good, do good, see good, you know? Don't cheat your fellow human being.
Yes.
Help them whenever you can.
Say your prayers, do your charity.
Be good to your neighbor. Serve your neighbor, you know. So on. So, the eternal values are the same. Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema is the same.
Exactly. They just put in different words.
And Baba said it so beautifully. Even the desires are the same.
Exactly.
You know, except the color that we give them.
Exactly.
So, if there is any kind of differentiation, it is in the mind of the people. Otherwise, there is no difference. It's only in the perception.
As Swami Vivekananda said, we have to go beyond the Bible and the Quran and the Vedas, but you have to do it through them.
Yes, we have to, because it's a stepping stone.
Yes.
Ultimately, everything has to reach, you know, the level of spirituality, the spirit.
Exactly.
That's very important.
Yes. And when you even think about it, Islam is actually such a profound religion.
It's not only Islam. Every religion is a profound religion if you go into depth.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter which way you take.
Exactly.
You know, as I explained to some of my friends, see, we don't choose our religion. It is the religion of our ancestors. It is the religion into which we are born. It is the religion given to us by God Himself.
Yes.
And it is our duty to pursue it.
And become better, as Swami said. You know, yes. Hindu, become a better Hindu. A Muslim, become a better Muslim.
No, he didn't say better. He said, be a good.
Be a good.
If you're a Christian, be a good Christian.
Yes.
If you're a Muslim, be a good Muslim. If you are a Hindu, be a good Hindu, you know. If you're a Jew, be a good Jew. So, that good is very important.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is the dharmic way. You know? So, the eternal values are the same everywhere. Except, we call it by different names.
Exactly.
That's all. But everybody knows that being dishonest is bad. Whether he's a Muslim or a Christian.
Or even an atheist.
Or an atheist, yes. That's right. Even an atheist. Everybody knows that.
Yes.
And everybody has a conscience. Whether they believe in God or not, they have a conscience. There is something in them which says, hey, this is not the right thing you're doing. Or, hey, this is okay. You know? So, even the atheists, they follow that conscience. Otherwise, it would be difficult. And then what about things like love and peace? Don't tell me atheists don't want love and peace. They won't.
Exactly. In that sense, there's no one who is an atheist.
Exactly. There is nobody as an atheist. They may call themselves an atheist. But Swami used to laugh also sometimes when he used to talk about atheists. He said, they just say that they're atheists. But when the time comes, nobody's an atheist. Which is true. When people are in trouble, and when there is no human hand which can help them,
exactly,
where do they turn? No, there's always a prayer.
Yes.
There's always a prayer at that moment.
Exactly.
You know? For example, when you know that in a minute, you know, you're going to have an accident, you're going to die. Who's going to help you that time? You know? So everybody knows what comes to your lips at that point of time.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then he used to play with words, you know, it's nowhere, the spelling. And he said, if you just split it in the right way, it's God is now here.
God is now here, yeah. Nowhere, now here. Yeah. As an English teacher, probably you must remember many of such interactions with Bhagwan when you used to play with words in casual conversations and also in discourses.
Yes, he was very good at that. And you know, the thing with Baba was, here is a personality who knew how he could say something so that you would understand it.
Exactly.
You know, that was the beauty. So he wouldn't say the same thing for everyone.
There's a beauty of the Sadguru.
Yes. He wouldn't say the same thing for everyone. But he would say it in a different way, in a way that everybody understood. And that way, I used to think of it like, he used to say, I'm reflection, resound, reaction. So he would react exactly to what you needed at that point of time.
Can you just explain that? You know, what is your understanding of reaction, reflection, resound?
Well, I can put it as a very interesting example. In the days when I joined the college, there was a day when Baba would say, tell all the new students to go and sit in the bhajan hall. And then he would have something called Ramkatha. So he would say, today we are going to have Ramkatha. All the new students should sit inside the mandir. And then he would come and sit on his throne and listen to the Ramkatha. So there was a group of students who used to sing the Ramkatha in Telugu. And it was very enjoyable. And many times, even in the middle, when Baba would feel like he would tell them to sing.
Yeah.
But this was a special day. He would say, all new students, you know, go into the bhajan hall and then we are going to have Ramkatha today. So, one of those days, he told us also, when we were new, he said, go and sit in the bhajan hall. All those who are new students, go and sit in the bhajan hall. We are going to have Ramkatha today. So, we all sat and it just happened that, you know, there was my brother, myself, and this boy whom Swami used to always call with me.
Okay.
So, we were sitting in different parts of the bhajan hall. My brother was right in the front, and this boy was in the middle of the hall, and I was at the back. So, Baba came down after everybody had settled. Baba came into the bhajan hall, and as was his norm, he would walk down the aisle. And then he came to where my brother was sitting, and he said, where's your brother? So, immediately my brother got up and started looking around. And then he said, hey, all are your brothers. You know? And immediately my brother said, I'm sorry, Swami. So he taught that to my brother. Now, the next person he came to was this other student. So he came down to the middle and he asked this boy, he said, where's your brother? And this boy said, Swami, all are brothers. Swami said, politician, politician. You know? And then he moved on. And towards the end of the hall, I was sitting and he said, "Where's your brother?" And of course, I had heard the whole conversation. So I replied the same way. I said, "Swami, all are brothers. Good boy, good boy." Now, why would Swami have three different things to say to the same question, to three different people? That was because he was reflection, resound, and reaction. For my brother, he was ignorant. So he taught him. He said, "All are brothers," you know. So my brother remembered that from that. For this boy, who thought, okay, this is the answer that Swami expects, but wasn't sincere about it, he said, "Oi, politician." Because this is what he was expected to say, so he said, but he didn't mean it. That's how Swami responded. And when he came to me, I actually believed what he said. So Swami responded by saying, "Good boy." So you see, in that small piece of interaction with Baba, you realize that he was always reflection and resound and reaction. So don't take him for granted, ever. Don't take Baba for granted. He is what he is. He is the divine. And then one time he did tell one student that, you know, there was some strobe light which somebody had, you know, brought, and they were showing it to Baba. And Baba was asking questions about it. You know, what is it? And this student stepped forward and he said, "You know, Baba, it's like this. This is how it works. And, you know, it rotates and light comes out in different form." And Baba listened very calmly and very patiently. And then when he finished, Baba looked straight at him into his eyes and very sternly said, "Sir, I only created everything. Don't ever forget that. Don't try to explain what it is to me. I know." You know, so when we forget, of course, I'm not saying that he would do that with everybody, but he did that with that person because he wanted to teach him a lesson. Yes. He wanted to teach him that don't forget that I am the divine. We tended to forget that.
Exactly. And you know? Because he's all the time so much a mix of human and divine that...
Exactly. No, you had to play the role. This is what Baba said about devotees. Once he told us, he said, there are three types of devotees. One is the devotee who takes everything literally. Whatever the divine says, he takes it literally and he does it. And the other one is who understands what the divine wants but struggles to complete it. And then there's a third type, who can preempt what the divine wants.
Yes.
Doesn't have to be told.
Yes.
So, he was always trying to lead us to the last. To the last one.
Hanuman was that kind. We were able to anticipate.
Anticipate and understand, you know, without words being spoken about what the divine wanted. And then do it.
Yes.
So, that only comes with an internal connection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Once your internal channel becomes so pure that you become a medium.
Right.
Sort of, you become that flute, as Bhagwan says.
Yes, you become the flute.
Yes.
Totally hollow, so that he can play his tune.
Yes.
It will be the music that he wants to play.
Exactly.
And that's important.
That's important.
Yeah.
You don't exist anymore.
Yes, you don't exist. And, you know, other times he used to say things like, either you become so small that you can slip through the chains of karma, or you become so big that you can break the chains. So, either you have to choose which way you want to go.
Wonderful. So many lessons living with the avatar. I think the more you think about those moments, the more you think about every particular interaction that you had with Swami. It's filled with... He was constantly teaching us. Even though he was laughing, he was joking, he was dining, or he was many times, you know, in such a playful mood, but all the time he was teaching.
Yeah. And the beauty was, you needn't have to be limited or afraid of asking any kind of question. You could just go ahead and question him.
So you have done that?
Yeah, I have questioned him or I have tested him. Yeah,
you have tested him?
Yeah, Baba said it himself. He said, "Test me as much as you want, but once you, you know, accept it, then
yes,
you should accept me for what I am." So he was open to testing. It wasn't that. And I'm sure there are a lot of devotees who tested him in various ways.
Yeah.
Mine would be a very small way, actually.
You know?
And also, you know, the cutting of the ego. He used to do that also. When he knew, you know, that you had an ego that came in the way, he would cut you down to size immediately.
Yeah, so anything that comes to your mind...
Yeah, very, very simple things. I had an ego that, you know, I'm very strong and, you know, physically I'm...
You are an athlete.
Yeah,
you're a sportsperson.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was a boxer. And so
you're a boxer, so, horse rider.
So I had this...
And cricket.
Yes.
You play cricket at the state level, right?
I used to play every sport. Even today, I can play any sport. So, you know, I had that feeling that I'm physically very strong. And it wasn't apparent. It was there in my subconscious. And that's what I think he wanted to remove. And he did this very nicely one day when we were distributing prasadam to devotees. So I was carrying this, particular dish of filled with prasadam. And I came to Baba because Baba had to bless it and then start the distribution. So the moment I approached Baba, what he did was, he turned his back slightly as if he can't see me. So now I had to wait. I waited 1 minute. The second minute, the dish became heavy. The third minute, I started sweating. The fourth minute, fifth minute, sixth minute, now I started praying.
Dish full of sweets.
Sweets, yes. And if I drop it in front of all the devotees, it wouldn't look good. And Swami is just about to bless it.
And so embarrassing, you can't really put it down.
Yes. So I was exerting all my strength. And he brought me to a point when I was just about to give up and I would have dropped it. He smiled, a little bit. And I remember he turned to one of the teachers and, there was this look that they exchanged that, okay, we understand now. And then he looked at me, like that, sideways. And he said, and he blessed it. Then I realized, I said, okay, I think I was just strong.
Oh my God, in
very subtle ways.
Subtle ways.
Yeah, okay. Nobody would have understood what's going on there, in that interaction.
Yeah, for any onlooker, it's like they're feeling sad for you that he's holding. But I think the thing that Swami broke in you that day was really profound.
Yes, this ego about my physical. And then I realized that, no, I have to be humble.
Yeah. I mean, even that is His grace. That's it.
Yeah. And what I think is a strength is actually not.
Yes.
It's also limited.
Yes.
It cannot extend indefinitely.
Yeah.
And so many other things. How did Baba know the exact point when I was going to give up? And then he'd turn at that exact point.
Yes.
And give me that knowing look. And how did he know what was going on in my mind? And so on. That's Baba.
Exactly, that's all he can say. That's Baba. And it's such a blessing when you have, I always say this, when you have God come down as a Sadguru. I mean, the kind of lessons that you can learn is so tremendous.
There are profound lessons and then there are these simple lessons also.
But the thing is, the cutting of ego, another guru probably would have taken much longer time to,
I don't know about other gurus. I cannot comment on them because I haven't actually seen anybody.
Yes.
But I can only comment on what Baba did. And he knew exactly how.
Yes.
He didn't preach.
That is another beautiful thing.
Yeah. He created that situation. Nowadays, a lot of people, if you go to Cambridge or Oxford, they talk about student-centered learning. Our Gurukul system always had that student-centered learning. Always learning was student-centered.
Yes.
There's nothing new to us. Unfortunately, we kind of given it up and gone some other way. But our gurus always used that. And Baba also did that.
Yes.
He made you realize, He didn't tell you in so many words. But he made you realize.
It was like it was there in you. He just uncovered that. What was there in you?
I don't know. If you evaluate the process, I guess you could say that. But what the fact of the matter was, he made you realize it.
Yes.
And that kind of learning, stands the test of time.
Yes.
You never forget that kind of.
Yeah, you never forget such kind.
Theoretically, you may. If you memorize something, you may. But not this kind of.
I think that's what we have seen. Every student, by the time he leaves this university, there are a few such magical moments in their lives.
Yeah.
And these are moments which have brought a dramatic shift, paradigm shift in their thinking.
Exactly.
And that has remained.
Exactly.
And that has remained with them as their pillar of strength, as their eternal source of inspiration. Every student.
Yeah, and look at the completeness of the teaching. The teaching was at the physical level, and then there was this teaching at the mental level. Then there was the teaching at the intellectual level. Then there was the teaching in the, the consciousness level, the super consciousness level, and so on. So it was, again, the only word I can use is the whole integrated learning, not limited to any particular level.
Exactly.
It was the whole thing.
Yes.
The learning took place in its complete form.
Yes. Because as Bhagavan always also mentioned that, no, we are not just the body, that body, mind and soul, that whole, whenever he talked about the development of personality, he referred that you have to develop at all the three levels. And so he gave training at all the three levels. And bend your body, mend your senses, and end the mind.
Yeah, because otherwise it would be a lopsided learning, you know.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be really helpful.
Yes. Wonderful. Thank you so much, sir. The moment you discuss about Swami, so many memories do flood your mind. And we have still not covered huge parts of your stay with Bhagavan, of your time as a faculty member, and the occasion when he asked you to leave the portals of his university and then move on. Those must have been, again, life-changing moments in your life.
Actually, Baba never tells you to do anything. Now, all my time where I stayed with him, he never tells you to do anything. At one time he said to us, he said, I'm not a ringmaster. I don't wield the whip and, you know, tell you to go do something. But he gives you hints, sometimes he gives you advice. Sometimes it's the advice that you're seeking, sometimes it's something which will, you know, not block your spiritual progress. It will help you, you know. If it came in your way, it would actually become an obstacle. So he would say things, but then he would never per se say, you know, you
won't
must
impose anything.
Yeah, he won't impose unless he had to.
Yeah.
He did it, but very rarely.
Yes.
He never said, you must do this, you have to do this, you know. Unless it was really urgent and really important, he would do that. So usually he would advise.
Yeah.
And since the time he married me, the moment I got married, the moment I tied the knot.
That must have been a difficult time for you to accept that, to get into the Grihastha stage of life.
Actually, no. Baba led me to it very, very slowly. You know, I never wanted to get married. And the surprising thing is, my wife never wanted to get married. And then he decided to marry both of us. And he was the person who chose one soulmate, I should say, for another. And I never saw my wife except on the day of marriage. So that was because I had complete faith in Baba. You know, if he has selected somebody, if he has said this is the one, and if I have to get married, then he's absolutely right, you know. I don't need to analyze and weigh and, you know, things like that. And at one point of time, he said to me, he said, I want you to see her. And I said, Baba, I don't have any desire to see my wife. You have chosen her. My father's agreed, my mother's agreed. I'm fine. And he said, I know what she's inside, he said. But you must see for yourself what she is like on the outside. And then I said to him, I said, I don't really need to, because I have complete, you know, faith in you, and I accept whatever your decision is. So he was very pleased with that. So the moment I got married, he started on the next step. He never, like I said, he never wastes time, you know. So now you've got responsibility. You're no longer single. So it is your duty now to earn money and, you know, to look after your family. So you must go and earn money. He started off. So once that, we cleared the marriage bit and we got married, then this was the other thing which he started with. So, you know, off and on he would keep on saying that, go out and make money and, you know, do your duty. He always said that to me right from day one. He always said this phrase, this was my mantra, do your duty, do your duty. So, and we kept on pleading with him, you know, Baba, we don't want to. We want to stay with you. We want to serve you. And so, both me and my wife. And he allowed us to a certain period of time. And I think that also was like the Gurukul. What I found very interesting in the Gurukul was, you did not graduate until the Guru felt that you were ready to graduate. It was not like 3 years or 5 years.
Exactly.
So, he would decide when you are ready to graduate, which was a time when he felt you are ready to enter into society and to, you know, live the life as you should in society. And then he would say, okay, now you are graduated. So, it didn't matter whether it was the number of years or the age and things like that. And I think that was what Baba did with us also. So, we managed to hang on for about 7 years after the marriage with Baba. And then he did step by step, you know. First, he moved us out of the ashram. So, you know, that was the first step into the world. And then he allowed us still to hang around. And then slowly when the opportunity came and I prayed to him and I said, Baba, this is the opportunity. Then he said, okay, now you can go. So,
he had to take that step because he's been constantly telling that.
Yes, and I think I can easily say that, you know, by that time I had developed that faith, you know, the distance doesn't make any difference with Baba. It doesn't matter where you are, you know, he's there. And he will always be there with you. He's the strongest.
He's sort of that stage.
Yeah. The strongest support system, you know. He's the strongest support system. And like he always told me, he said, do your duty. So that was what he expected from me, and that was my role to play. And that's the role I played. So I'm always happy thinking that I'm following, you know, what he said. And that gives me the strength. So everything has been his grace. I mean, he's looking after everything. I cannot say that, you know, I cannot take credit for anything that I've done.
Yes.
It's always been him. It's always been him. And he is the strongest support system. The best and the strongest.
And that is the experience of every Sai student. I think that self-confidence that Swami talks about. You have confidence, not on that small S, but S with that capital S, self with that capital S. Once you have, as Bhagwan says, you know, it's like that bird which is on the branch. Even if there is a storm, the bird is absolutely fearless because it can anytime fly.
Yes.
It's dependent on the wings. It is never dependent on the branch or anything.
Very, very. That's very true.
So I think that's an experience with all the Sai students. Anything happens, you know, you can depend on that, on that pillar, on that colossus of strength that Swami is.
And every time, whenever he told me to do something or, you know, he commanded me, and in my prayers it has always been, I don't want anything. I just want your love and your grace, your love and your grace, you know. Always be with me. This is always my prayer. And I guess he's always answered it. And I pray that he keeps on answering.
Yeah, and then that is, I think then that is an experience for perhaps for many, not only students, but many devotees. And I think everyone who has prayed only for his proximity or his grace, I think they've always felt that blessing in their life. It's a thing of we doing that connection inside.
Yeah.
Wonderful, sir. Thank you very much for coming to the studios. And I know over 3-4 days we have discussed so many things. This is one of the treasures for the studio to learn from you and to document your time with Bhagwan, because each moment that we have spent with the avatar is precious and it has lessons of life for us, for the immediate generation and for generations to come.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you also very much. It's been a real delight. Thank you so much.
Sairam.
You just heard the 7th and the concluding part of a conversation with Mr. Gautam Dutt, an alumnus of Baba's University who basked in his physical proximity for nearly 20 years, 5 years as a student, and then 14 years as a faculty member in his university till 2003. This conversation was recorded in August 2013, and as of then, Mr. Dutt continued to work in the Sultanate of Oman, serving as the head of Department of English in the Caledonian College of Engineering. This was yet another episode of our series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, and in conversation with him was Radio Sai's Bishu Prosti. You're welcome to share your feedback by writing to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you very much and Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and thank you for your company on Morning Glory. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Mr. Gautam Dutt. As a matter of fact, you can enjoy listening to over 170 such interviews with Bhagwan students by going to www.radiosai.org/Sai Students. Sai Students is one word and is plural. And you can just download a conversation of your choice and listen at leisure. With that, it is now time for me to bid you Sai Ram and to offer Morning Glory at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Until next Thursday, please be well, keep seeking and stay inspired. Up next is Service Love in Action with Brother Raghu. Sai Ram.